Chairs No Waiting, episode number 366, Neil Brower interview, Morgan Brittany, 2011, part one. Wow, I've got some long names. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at Weaver's and check out what they've got. You'll enjoy it. Lots of great Mayberry items there. The calendar's almost gone. Year's half over. It's getting there. Head over there and check it out. Weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. Executive producer of episode number 366 is Mr. Court Howell. Court Howell, thank you, Court, for your support. He's one of our patrons at patreon.com. So if you want to support the Two Chairs No Waiting podcast, you can head over to our website. And if you scroll down just a little bit, there's a big thing that says become a patron of Two Chairs No Waiting. And you can donate $1 an episode or $3 an episode or $100 an episode, whatever you'd like to do. But I want to thank all of our patrons for doing that. I want to thank all of you guys that have supported the show, either through donations or for, giving me great information to provide to each other here on the show. Who am I? I'm Alan Newsome. You're a host for Two Chairs No Waiting. Thank you for spending some time in Mayberry with me. It's always fun to spend time with you, sitting around talking about the Andy Griffith Show. It's our favorite show. I know it is, or you wouldn't be here talking with me. But this week, again, we're going to hand the show over to Neil Brower. Because back in 2011, the last few episodes we did with Bruce Bilson, where he was interviewing Bruce. And as part of those interviews, he was also able to, that same year, to interview Morgan Brittany. So we're going to talk to her in just a minute. But before we start, I want to give you, here's just a little bit of voicemail feedback I got back in the last few weeks. This one's not got anything to do with the Bruce Bilson episodes, but the voicemail is from Neil Brower, and he's got some pretty cool news for us. So, Neil?
Hey, Alan, this is Neil Brower. I saw the movie Hateful Eight yesterday, and since learned through an interview with Samuel L. Jackson that the interiors of the saloon, which was the main set in the movie, were shot in one of the studios of the old Desi Lou lot. I'm not sure which one, but it was shot right there with Andy and the Dick Van Dyke Show and I Love Lucy, others that were shot there. So I wanted to pass it on to you. I thought it was an interesting Andy Griffith tie-in. Enjoy your podcast. I'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Wow. Thank you for calling in, Neil. That is really neat. There's always a Mayberry connection. I was watching a show called Svengoolie. Some of you guys may or may not know what it is. It comes on MeTV. Which shows Andy Griffith Show, so that's one of the good things about that tie-in. But I was watching, I think it was called The Boy Who Cried Werewolf was the name of the movie. It's one of those, you know, old bad horror movies. I hate to say bad, you know, somebody may have really loved this movie. But I was watching it. Jan was on the TV on the couch ignoring it with all of her might. And I said, hey, look where they are. There was a scene where the guy who was supposed to be a werewolf, they were at Myers Lake. That's where they were. So there's always a Mayberry connection. If you're watching movies and TV shows, be on the lookout for those Mayberry connections. But that movie, there was a lot of scenes filmed right there at Franklin Canyon at Myers Lake where Andy and Opie walked. It was the exact spot where Andy and Opie had walked, actually. It was where the main portion of these scenes I was seeing the night on The Boy Who Cried Werewolf. So we got The Hateful Eight and The Boy Who Cried Werewolf. That's not a good enough reason to watch The Boy Who Cried Werewolf. But it was on Svengoolie, so I watched it. Anyway, thanks, Neil. Thanks for calling in. We had another voicemail that was in, and I wanted to share this with you before we get completely started here, because Janet Anderson called in talking about Bruce Bilson. So, Janet, take it away.
Hey, Alan, this is Janet Anderson. I don't usually do the voicemail thing. I prefer to type, but I thought I'd give you a call this time. I was reading today's digest and saw your link for the Two Chairs No Waiting, and I was thinking it was the new one. I clicked on it, and when I was watching it, I thought, oh, that's the one I saw last week. But it was so interesting with Bruce Bilson that I decided to go ahead and watch the whole thing again. And I was glad I did, because at the end he's talking about the extras, the background actors. And for some reason I didn't catch that the last time. But I really found interesting the part where he says that they shared extras basically with the other Desilu shows. And I thought to myself, well, that explains why in a number of the Andy Griffith episodes you see in the background as one of the extras Hazel Pierce, who was Lucille Ball's stand-in on I Love Lucy and her probably her other shows too, which you see her on there sometimes too. So I thought, well, that makes sense, because I'd noticed her before. She's pretty easily identifiable. Another thing, and maybe this will, I haven't listened to the new podcast yet, so I'm not sure if it comes in this one, but I was really surprised when discussing the extras that Neil Brower did not ask Bruce Bilson if he knew the identity of Mr. Schwump. And I'll be listening to the next podcast to see if that's addressed, but I thought, well, if he's finished talking about the extras, then maybe that wasn't brought up. But I wonder if he's a person that has ever been asked about Mr. Schwump or not. So I'll be interested to hear if that comes up or why it hasn't come up. So I'm finding this very interesting, and I look forward to listening to the next episode. So thanks a lot, Alan, and I'll keep listening. Bye-bye.
Janet, I want to thank you. Thank you for calling in. That's great. Hey, yeah, I thought that was really neat, too, that he's talking about the Lucy stand-ins and the stand-ins from the other shows that were filmed there on Desilu appeared on the Andy Griffith Show as well. But about Mr. Schwump. Mr. Schwump, Bruce doesn't know who Mr. Schwump is. That was asked. It wasn't asked. I don't think it was asked during this these sessions that we just finished. But he doesn't know. That has been asked of him before, and there is he doesn't know. It's a complete mystery. They remember him, all the different cast members and crew members. They remember Mr. Schwump. They remember the man, but they don't know his name, which is still, it kind of just amazes me. All right, so I want to thank our folks for calling in. Thanks, Bruce, and thanks, Janet, for calling in and being part of the show. I always love to hear from you guys. You can call me at 888-684-8415 and let me hear from you as well. All right, we're going to hand it back over to Bruce now so that we can get this going with Morgan Brittany. Now, this was filmed or recorded. Again, I want to thank Neil and Pat Coleman for providing the video or an audio, depending on which you're doing, for this this episode, where they're going to talk to Morgan. Now, honestly, I think, well, if you'd like to see Morgan Brittany, she's very easy to look at. So this is a good podcast to watch, but she's not going to be showing a lot of things like I recommended you watch for Bruce Bilson. He was showing a lot of things on the screen and things that you should see. But this episode will be just, is entertaining for most people. If you just listen, myself, I kind of like watching. So let's head over and see what's happening with Morgan Brittany and Neil Brower back at Mayberry Days, 2011.
Now, the great thing about coming to Mount Airy during Mayberry Days is you can see beautiful blue eyes on stage. And I can look straight across and see those beautiful blue eyes in person. That's the wonderful thing about Mayberry Days. Morgan, it's great to have you here.
Thanks.
Can you tell us a little bit? I want to start with the name. Now, we looked in the credits, we did not see Morgan Brittany.
No.
So tell us about your name.
Well, I started in this business way back in 1956. And I was a child actor, and I used my real name, which was Suzanne Capito. I used that name all the way up till I did a movie called Yours, Mine, and Ours with Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda. And at that point, I was 16 years old, and I was kind of, not an adult and not a kid, and so I wasn't able to get much work. And it was very difficult for child actors back then, because once you grew up, there was really no place for you to go. In fact, Ron Howard, Kurt Russell, and myself were really the only kids that made it through to adult, you know, actors. We grew up with Angela Cartwright from Danny Thomas and Lost in Space, John Provost from Lassie, all the boys on My Three Sons. But when they got older, they didn't continue on, most of them. So your career was kind of finished at that point. And I really didn't want to quit the business, even though at that time it looked like the career was over. So I made a decision to change my name, change everything, change image, look, and move to New York City and start over. And that's exactly what I did.
Well, were you raised in California?
I was, yes.
And what were the occupations and the names of your mother and father?
Well, my dad, I really didn't know. My mother, she was actually a singer at the Grand Ole Opry. And she lived in Atlanta, Georgia, but she came out to California. And, you know, as a single mom, she and my grandmother, they started me in show business in Hollywood when I was 5 years old. And that's really all I ever knew as a child. I grew up in Hollywood, went to school at the studios, did some incredible shows. I mean, I had the good fortune of working with just some of the most brilliant actors. I did Gypsy with Natalie Wood and Rosalind Russell. I played Baby June in that. I did The Birds with Alfred Hitchcock. You know, shows, I ran the gamut. I did Twilight Zones, Outer Limits, Rawhide, Gunsmoke. And, you know, I was looking back on this, and I was thinking, you know, we thought these shows, we'd go from show to show to show. And it was kid actors, you know, 1 week we'd do My Three Sons, then we'd go to Lassie, then we'd go to something else. And we didn't realize really what we were experiencing, how really wonderful it was, how great they were written, what a good message they had. You look at it now in hindsight and you think, wow, you know, it holds up, and that's why it holds up today.
And there's a good lesson taught in
absolutely
this episode.
Absolutely. And you know, you kind of take it for granted when you're working, you know, you just do it, but it's, you know, they have really, really strong messages and good values, good morals. I mean, I ended up finally being an okay person at the end, but, you know, and the funny thing about that is I remember when I went in for the casting on that, they were looking for an actress. Most of the actresses that were going in were playing her way too mean, way too nasty. And they wanted that kind of medium sort of, well, I hate to do this. You know, you don't want to hate her, but you're not going to like what she does to Opie, but you can't just hate her. And so they couldn't find an actress that could bring that. And I remember when I went in for the reading, and the director, he said, "Yeah, you've got the quality. It's likable, but yet we're not going to root for you." And then at the end, you turn out to be the good guy. So
you had a lot of experience with acting. What was your knowledge of the Andy Griffith Show, and was it at all exciting for you once you got cast on that show to know that you were going to be working with Ron Howard?
It's funny you should say that. When I did Gypsy, I was eight or nine years old, and that was done at Warner Brothers. And right after Gypsy, they called my agent, and they were going to cast me in The Music Man with Ron, who played the little boy in Music Man, and cast me as Amaryllis, I guess that was the name of the little girl. And it didn't work out for some reason, and they said, no, she's going to be coming out in Gypsy, we don't want to have her. So I didn't get to work with Ron at that point. And it's funny how years later, years down the line, there I was. And now I knew Ron for, you know, being a child actor, but we never really had worked together. And you know, all the kids back then knew each other. There wasn't a big pool of child actors. There was a small group that really just worked all the time together. But it was exciting for me. I loved that show anyway. I used to watch it all the time.
Do you have any special memories of anything that went on that week as you were putting this together?
Well, I was listening to Bruce talk about when he was talking about the sound stages and the dressing rooms and the school room. And I remember because Ron, we all had a lot of scenes to do in this episode. I mean, we had a lot of work to do. And the way they work it for school is they'll have you go to school. And so Ron and I are sitting there, and I'm trying to think, the little girl that played Iris and Sheldon. And we were in school, and they'd have us there, and we'd be doing school for 20 minutes, and then the AD would come in, and he'd say, okay, I need the kids on the set, and we'd be in the middle of something, and we'd run out to set and shoot one of the scenes, and then when that was over, we'd run back to school, and we'd do some more school. And Ron was working hard that day because he was doing a lot of the scenes with Andy, and I was kind of listening out the side of the... It was just like a box that we were in, and you could hear everything that went on. But the great thing about it that I noticed is the comfort zone that Andy and Ron had. It was almost like it wasn't scripted for them. It was almost like it was real conversation.
And it grew. I was thinking as I watched that, we saw the scene with Andy and Opie from The New Housekeeper when he's so little.
Right,
and
right.
Then here are these two 8 years later.
Yeah.
And still the chemistry maybe is even deeper because they have grown together.
They have. And it's was interesting for me because a lot of times when you're thrown into a situation where you don't really know the actors, it takes you a long time to warm up to people. I felt comfortable the first day I walked on that set because everybody was just comfortable in their characters. They knew exactly what they wanted. It's like Bruce was saying. Everybody knew their job. Everybody did their job. And there was no temperament. There was people laughed and had fun. It was an atmosphere that was really comfortable. And I can't say all the shows were like that. There were a lot of shows that were very tense. On Dallas, we had some tense moments, you know. And it was, you know, you'd walk on set and go, oh boy, what's today going to bring, you know. But Andy Griffith's show was one of the best, I think.
Now, as a guest star, would you sit through the read-through with the regular cast members? Were you involved in that? Do you remember?
You know, I don't remember doing a read-through on this. I just remember showing up the first day for work.
And would you have had your lines memorized that day?
Oh, yeah.
Or would have been rehearsal?
No, you know you got to be off book when you go in. And then when you go into the first scene, they'll block it. They'll camera block it, and then they'll do the lighting. And then you shoot right away. I mean, it's pretty quick. And then you move on, and they go on to the next thing. But I remember being traumatized because I had to wear those stupid rollers. And here I am working with Ron and this other guy, and I'm thinking, oh, great. I look so attractive.
And I want to kind of tie us in with that. Do you remember, did you have to provide your own wardrobe?
No.
Or they provided the dresses?
No, they provided everything. You go in a couple days prior for a wardrobe fitting, and they see, you know, how they want you to look and what colors everybody else is wearing so that you don't clash with anybody. I mean, it's a big deal, you know. It's a big deal.
Is there anything else you would like to share before we take some questions from the audience? Anything else?
Well, I can just say, you know, we were talking over here on the side that The Andy Griffith Show, I mean, you look at it now and you realize how bad television is today compared to what television was. And I look at old shows like I Love Lucy, that still holds up. And you look at Don Knotts in some of these, you know, some of the earlier scenes and how genuinely funny without being gross and disgusting and over the top and just where you just cringe. You know, that was true comedy. I got the good fortune of working with Mickey Rooney and Eddie Foy and Bob Hope and a lot of great comedians. And it's hard to be a comedian. It's tough. It's easy to do dirty humor. It's easy. But to do genuine humor and heartfelt humor where you, I mean, Don Knotts to me was just, he was a genius. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. And I look at that and I just think, we don't have people like that anymore. We just don't. I mean, I look around and I think, well, you know, who have we got that can take his place? I don't know.
And weren't you fortunate to have worked with these people?
I was so fortunate. I was looking back on my career because I've been doing a lot of things. I'll either do Twilight Zone, convention kind of things, or talk about Dallas, or talk about The Birds, where I'll do a sci-fi thing. And I think how lucky I was to be able to be a part of Hollywood in its really amazing days. I mean, the early days of television were just unbelievable. I think the first TV show I ever did was Sea Hunt with Lloyd Bridges, and I was about five or six years old. And I have vivid memories of that. But just working with directors, you know, like Mervyn LeRoy and Alfred Hitchcock and people like that, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And it's been a wonderful career. It's been hard. There's been ups and downs. Can't say it's easy. But it's been very fulfilling, and I am so fortunate to have worked with Andy. And that's another thing. Ron, when he went on to be a director, I think all those years that he learned from working on this show, he learned things that come from the heart. And a lot of his projects show that. They really do. And I think he has that inside that he's bringing out and giving to people. And I think a lot of it stems back from this show because it had so much heart. And it, you know, we all still love it.
Yeah. Well, let's take some questions from the audience. Alan, if you'll take the mic out, just raise your hand if you have a question. We'll take maybe just a few.
Lord, I don't know how long it is.
Whatever happened to Fred Simpson?
Whatever happened to Fred Simpson? Gosh, I don't know whatever happened to Fred Simpson. I do remember that the director on that thing kept saying, I can't remember his name, David, I think his name was, and he kept telling him, you know, do that thing with your hair, do that dance, and do that thing. He kept feeling like, he's like, oh, I look like such an idiot. And he says, no, it's really going to work. It's going to work. You know, you're going to look like a real, you know, jerk. And it worked. It really did. It was very good. I don't know what happened to that guy. He probably continued to work, but like I said, you know, a child actor's shelf life is very short. It's easier today, I think, for younger actors to get through and become adults, like Drew Barrymore did it, and I think Dakota Fanning is, you know, she has a career. But, you know, back then, you were pretty much done by the time you reached 16. And that's, you know, that's a very tough thing. A lot of my contemporaries from that era didn't do so well, you know.
Another question, if you'll raise your hand.
Come on over here.
I noticed you on Sean Hannity's show, I guess, a couple times. And,
you're obviously
expressing some conservative values. I was really encouraged to hear that.
Yes.
I guess everybody is.
They hate me in Hollywood.
So I guess I was wondering, you know, is this something that's always been with you, or more, even more recently, or that you
It's been there. It's really been there. I've always been much more conservative in my views. Even in my early career, you know, it's really tough for a young female actress to say no to a lot of projects. When you're not well known in the business, you get offered a lot of questionable roles and a lot of questionable things. And maybe growing up as a child actor, I learned a lot. Because when I turned 18, 19, I was offered roles with a lot of nudity, you know, drug addiction, smoking pot, whatever it was that it took. And I would always tell my agents, I'd say, you know what, no, I don't want to do that. That's not something that I would feel comfortable with. And they'd, you know, say, well, what's the matter with you? You're an actress. You should be able to do anything. I said, yeah, I know. But someday I may have kids and my kids will see it. And I don't want them to see me doing that. And so everybody kind of knew, oh, you know, she's one of those. She's not going to do all that stuff. And I think I've always had the more conservative values. Even on Dallas, when I was working the show and I was playing the bad guy, I would talk to the writers and I'd say, where is she going with this? I mean, Catherine seems to be getting more and more power and more she's getting away with, you know, threatening people and breaking up marriages and doing all this. Is she going to suffer for this at all, or is she going to end up winning? And the producer said, no, she's going to get it in the end. And I went, ah, good, because I don't want to be, I don't want to be held up as some kind of hero. You know, I was big in the prisons, let me tell you. I used to get fan mail from death row going, hey, girl. But I can't, you know, I kept saying, she's got to suffer, you know, for the deeds that she's done. Because if you look at Dallas, you look at, there was definite black and white. There was Larry Hagman and JR that was the dark side, even though he was likable dark side. And then there was Bobby, who was the, you know, the shining knight. And there was good against evil. And evil always suffered. And so I thought, okay, that's fine. I have no problem with that. And I had no problem playing the bad guy. But things over the past few years have gotten so turned upside down that now the worse you are, the more rewarded you are. You know, and it's boggling my mind because it's not the world I grew up in. And I can't make any sense out of it. So, like you said, I do Hannity's show. I'm outspoken. I let Hollywood know where I'm standing. If they want me to support, you know, certain candidates or go out and you know, rally the troops or do motivational speeches or, you know, I work for the USO, I'll go out for Wounded Warriors. Anything that will put America back in a positive light. Because people look at Hollywood like they're crazy. They really do. And a lot of the people in Hollywood, you just have to think, what are you guys thinking? You know, what are you thinking? And a lot of them don't think. They just follow. If somebody is going a certain way, then it's okay. I'm just going to follow it. Well, I couldn't do it. I kept listening to the bashing, and I kept, you know, America's at fault, and this and this and this, and I couldn't take it anymore. So I finally got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm not going to be silent anymore. I'm going to speak out. And if Hollywood doesn't like it, then Hollywood doesn't like it. So.
All right. So that's the first part of our Morgan Brittany interview. I hope you guys have been enjoying that. Hopefully you enjoyed her position there at the end. Because, you know, if you don't like it, you got to get out there and do something about it. And, you know, that's, you know, I think that's true in our Mayberry life as well. You know, we shouldn't put up with people acting in ways they shouldn't act. So get out there and, stand up for what you believe in. That's what Andy did. He believed in things and he stood up for him, Andy Taylor. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that. I want to thank Neil Brower for allowing us to use his wonderful interviews that he did at Mayberry Days and at his Professor Brower's class. I want to thank Neil and Pat Coleman once again for getting the video, audio that you're listening to or seeing, whichever it might be, to us. And I want to thank you. I want to thank all of you guys for being here. And I'd love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 or drop me an email at floyd@imayberry.com. Don't forget to head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check things out over there. A lot of stuff there that's Mayberry. Those help support this podcast because my wife and I actually run the store now. So definitely head over there and help support the show. Folks, I want to thank you for being here. We'll be having at least two more episodes with Morgan. Part two is coming up next week. So be looking forward to that, and we'll see you guys next time. Right here on Two Chairs No Waiting, your Mayberry podcast. Until then, have a great week. See you then.